Jose Valonte, and he's got a pretty cool podcast that you can check out. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But listen, our handles, we've got our Twitter handle, which is at Out of Line. I should say it's at Out of Line 1340 AM. We also have the Facebook page, which is simply Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. And without you, there's no show. So you're always welcome to try to give us a call. It's up to Magnum whether you get through or not. So if you don't hate on me, hate on him. The number is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Carpenter tips to the right, point in a shot. Stop, loose puck in front, and it's in! It's Hika! It's his first NHL goal! Vegas strikes first, 1-0, 2.5 minutes into the first.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that was the first goal of a young man's career, which was pretty darn cool. We'll talk about that as well as Hika. It looks like Hika, but I believe it's Hika.
And can you say that one more time with your cold?
Three NHL games, and Gallant said after, no, I couldn't say it three times, but three NHL games, Gallant said after the game the other night that they just got done winning against the Vancouver Canucks that, wow, he is jumping like he's been in the league for a while, and he just got brought up, and
He just got sent back down.
He did, but you know what? He scored a goal, and the first goal in that game, and he got his first NHL scar, too. He had a nice little, like, small gash under his left eye, and he was proud as hell of it, wasn't he?
Yeah, he said right after the game that, you know, it happened right after he scored the goal. You know, he probably should have gotten a point on Wednesday night when they played Calgary, but, you know, the rules in hockey are, you know, he sent the pass, but it was deflected by a Flames player right onto the stick of Ryan Carpenter, who scored
you can't get an assist.
One of the best goals that I've ever seen in my life, Ryan Carpenter scored, because if you didn't see the highlight on that Wednesday night game, he basically had his back to the goal, went through his legs backhanded, and you know, he looked like Roger Federer at Wimbledon the way he was able to put that in the net. But I mean he got unfortunately sent back down, maybe making space for some other roster moves that may be coming?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, George McPhee, man, we're talking about the ultimate conductor. This dude is definitely out recruiting more band members, and I guarantee they will fit right into the symphony. This guy is amazing, and we're going to have one of our guests, as a matter of fact, shortly we'll talk about it, because today we will spend a decent amount of time on what has been one of my favorite sports long before the Vegas Golden Knights came to town. But since they continue to win, making them one of the biggest stories on the planet, as Missy Lynn says. Tonight's nightcap goes on today, and we're going to have William Carlson. You're going to hear what I talked to William Carlson after the game, who is a pretty big story himself and a key to why winning has almost become expected by our first-year expansion team. We'll also be joined live by Ken Morrow.
And
if you're not, if you're not familiar with Kenny Morrow, Google the roster of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, or you can type in Miracle on Ice. Maybe type in players who have won four Stanley Cups. His name will be there, too. You'll also hear an extended one-on-one I just did with Las Vegas native and 2017 Daytona 500 winner Kurt Busch, and Jeff Motley, the vice president of public relations for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, will be joining us today. He'll help us out with Blazin', where we'll be giving away tickets for next week's NASCAR race. Also, fact this involves the slumping Running Rebels and today's rare Sunday morning game. They are in New Mexico. We'll talk about that as well. And the best and worst part about the show, as I mentioned, is you can check us out right now on Facebook Live. So tune in. We'd love to have you. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com. For more information. All right, guys, I'll tell you what. Go ahead, hit the nightcap. Let's kick that off right away.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
All right, the Vegas Golden Knights. That's way old. Anyways, listen up, people. This team is absolutely unbelievable. It truly is. It's ridiculous. We go on and on about it every week. But, guys, Mags, I'll start with you. You're in the locker room all the time. You go to the practices every week. You've seen this team at their best. You've seen them at their worst, which there is no real worst. And what do you think, man? I mean, isn't it strange that you go to the facility, you go to T-Mobile Arena, and it's like we expect them to win every night? You really do. Like, even when they go down early, it's like, ah, they're going to win tonight.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice that they've built that type of, reputation as, you expect that they're going to win every single night when you go to the game, you know? I mean, when they lost to Anaheim on Monday, they didn't play terrible. They just, Anaheim was able to figure out a way to basically, prevent them from putting the puck in the net. And maybe it was it was first game without James Neal, no Shea Theodore in that game as well. So, there certainly were some, indications on that game anyway that, this is the way you're going to have to play this team going forward. And, Calgary and Vancouver are both teams that like to get out and fly. And, they play more of a Golden Knights style. And, the problem with those two teams is, they're just not good enough to play that style against Golden Knights. I mean, Calgary, they played really well the first game, which was up in Calgary. And I guess there was a lot from the Calgary players that maybe Vegas stole that game, and maybe they did. However, that game was up and down, which is exactly what the Knights wanted. They want teams to get out and skate with them and, give them space. And Calgary and Vancouver both did that. Anaheim didn't. So, but There certainly is an expectation they are going to win every single night going forward, and especially when they're at home. I mean, best home record in the history of the NHL for an expansion team. They have guaranteed themselves a winning record, which no expansion team in the history of sports has ever done. They are, without a doubt, they are the greatest expansion franchise in the history of professional sports, and there's no way to sugarcoat that. I mean, I'm not saying that because they're our local team. I mean, they are statistically one of the best teams in the NHL, and there's no doubt about that. They have arguably the best line in the NHL.
Plus minus wise, if you want to look at it.
Do you think now with the pressure is definitely going to start coming on. Do you really think that the Knights are going to be able to carry it on further? I know in the beginning of the season where it was, and other teams, they've been here already. They know exactly what they're doing. So, have they just been fooling us in a way?
No. I don't worry about the pressure because they have Marc-Andre Fleury, who's won 3 Stanley Cups. He won a gold medal with Canada in the Olympics, although he told me the other day he didn't really play, but he still won the gold medal. James Neal went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. They have guys, and to be perfectly honest, there's not a guy in that locker room who isn't loose. They're all loose players. None of them, you talk to a guy like Jonathan Marchessault, he's like the coolest customer in the building because he doesn't get worked up, and he told me, I talked to him earlier in the week, and he said, he likes to keep it loose. He likes to have fun, and, you talk to a lot of these guys, and that's what they say. Look, we just want to have fun. And even Coach Gallant, one of his philosophies, the cornerstone is have fun, And, you talk to Nate Schmidt, and he'll tell you, I get paid to play hockey. I get paid to play a game. I have fun. I keep it loose, And so I don't really see the pressure getting to these guys. I just don't.
Well, the pressure is always there every game. It's a National Hockey League game. You go out and you put pressure on yourself. You have butterflies to start the game. But this team is uncanny. They are loose every game. That line you talk about with Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and William Karlsson is absolutely magical. I mean, the passes that are made. Riley Smith, we talk about Jonathan Marchessault, 61 points is absolutely unheard of for an expansion team at this point. And to look at the fact these guys have 4 players with over 50 points, and all 4 of them are very likely going to have over 60 points.
Well, they have 5 guys with 20 goals, and David Perron needs to get 5 more to get to 20. They would have 6 guys
with 20 goals. Well, how about 2 defensemen have over 30 points already this season?
Colin Miller is I don't think a lot of people knew a whole lot about him coming into the season because he was a guy who played in the AHL. He had a little bit of time with Boston, not a ton.
But, very gritty player.
But his slap shot is insane with how good it is. And then on the other end of that, you look at a guy like Derek England, and statistically he's having the best offense. He's 35 years old, and he's having the And you know what's funny? When I asked Gallant about that on Friday night, his response to me was, nothing I did. You got to ask Derek.
Yeah. Derek is somehow, he's got the pixie dust, man. I mean, the guy is playing incredible. And I'll tell you one of the reasons, and I almost brought this up as well, Max, because I liked your question in the press conference. What else I want to say about Derek England is, you know, he's a guy they did not have to use an expansion draft pick on. They could have easily gotten him on waivers, picked him up through free agency. But what they said to Derek England is, you know what? We want you, and we are going to use an expansion draft pick on you. Here are the guys. 35 years old. He was going to be a cast off, yet we made him feel wanted. And I say we, I'm being a homer, but the bottom line is the Golden Knights made him feel wanted, and he has responded.
And he's proving it. Yeah, he's proving it.
Plus, he's a Vegas local. I mean, him and his wife live here. He played for the, he played in, you know, used to see the guy back in the early part of this century, I should say, down at the Orleans when he was playing for our minor league team down there. Pretty cool. I love Derek England. I like this whole team. But listen up, I want to tell you that right now, last year, I should say at the beginning of the season, if you would have said at the end of the year, the Golden Knights would end with 60 points total, I think nobody here that understood hockey would have been remotely disappointed. They would have said, wow, that's a good first season. And yet this team is so far above that right now. It's crazy. They lead the NHL as they did last week. 86 points this team has. It is truly crazy. Well, listen, the guy I wanted to talk about, and I got to talk to again after the game, one of our favorite flavors. How about favorite players?
He is my favorite flavor.
He is. You like William Carlson.
You know what? If he was in Baskin-Robbins, I would get a William Carlson.
Yeah.
You know?
I just invested, by the way, Matt. I got to tell you, I invested in my first jerseys, and I got a pretty good deal. Missy's got her jersey on and her hat. But I got myself a William Carlson and a Marc-Andre Fleury jersey, one home, one away. I thought, you know what? I'm not going to listen to Barry Melrose's advice from last May, and I decided to go ahead and buy a couple players' jerseys, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with William Carlson. You know, it's funny because I actually have not bought a jersey, but I do think if I would have, I think just because of my personal relationship with William Carlson, I think I would probably go with him only because, you know, I've from day one, me and him have just gotten along really well. And, you know, I mean, I've gotten things out of him that I don't I don't know if it's a bromance because I don't think he loves me back the same way I love him. But, you know, he's really, really cool guy. And, you know, I'm the only one in the media who talks to him about Aquavits, and most people don't even know what that is. So.
Aquavits. I don't know if I want to know what that
is. It's like Swedish vodka.
I
want to know what it is now. Right now, I could use a shot of it.
Well, it will knock you on your ass. We'll put it that way.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Carlson, again, you know, the one thing is, Mags, my reason for getting his jersey is the way that he's played this year. A guy that's never had more than single digits in goals in his career, playing in Columbus. And one of the questions I asked him was about that. Can you imagine if you could have even looked into a crystal ball and someone would have said a year later, you're in Columbus a year from now, you're going to be in Las Vegas on the best team in the National Hockey League, and you're going to be the leading goal scorer on the team with 33 goals. And you'll hear him. He said, I'd have said you were crazy. I mean, but it's happening. It's real. This guy's great. And he scored two more goals again on Friday night.
Around the rim to the far side, Smith right corner. Dances, center, shot, score! William Carlson set up by Smith. Vegas ties it 2-2. Left wing shot. Score! It's Carlson again! And Vegas takes a 3-2 lead.
William, real quick, I got to ask you about this line. What is it like, and what makes this line with you and Jonathan and Riley so special?
Well, we're playing the same type of hockey. We always try to have the puck with us and not throw it away. And I think we're all pretty fast, too, and we try to play fast hockey and counterattack as soon as we get the puck.
What do you enjoy the most about playing with those guys?
Well, they give me a lot of good passes, so I enjoy that a lot.
If I would have told you 1 year ago right now, I know it's something you're not thinking about. You were in Columbus a year ago. If I was said last year right now, go back, a year from now you're going to be in Las Vegas, you're going to have 33 goals and be on one of the best teams in hockey, what would you have said?
I told you you're crazy, but hey, it's hockey. Everything can happen.
This team, the sky's limit. I mean, they're saying the playoffs are coming, you know, not far down the road. It looks like you guys are headed in that direction. What do you have to do differently? You know, you've been in this league for a little bit. When that time comes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when playoffs comes, it's a bit of a different game. It's much harder and faster, and I mean, everything around is going to be electric, and just got to rise for the occasion and and be ready for when the puck drops.
I think they will be ready for when the puck drops in the playoffs. And I think, you know, the one thing is about the Stanley Cup playoffs, unlike any of the other major sports, baseball, football, or basketball, an 8 seed has a shot, as we've seen so often, especially just in the past decade, with the LA Kings winning out of the 8 hole. Of course, Jonathan Quick, you get a hot goaltender, and that's what happens. And last year you saw it in Nashville with Pekka Rinne. The guy literally led that team all the way to the Stanley Cup. I mean, guys like James Neal and a lot of other great players in the team helped out. But a hot goaltender can literally can take you all the way, because the bottom line is you have to put the puck in the net. And a couple of years ago for the LA Kings, Jonathan Quick was impermeable, and that's what won them the Stanley Cup. So that's what the Golden Knights have to watch out for. You got a team like San Jose, you've got an inconsistent goaltender, some great veteran players. That is a team I think you have to worry about in the postseason. You got to worry about the LA Kings. They're a team that traditionally gets hot in the postseason.
Well, that's
this week too, yeah, exactly. And Anaheim just showed they know how to close down the Golden Knights. So another team within our own division that we do have to worry about in the postseason. But right now, enjoy the hell out of this. It's been nothing but spectacular. You see a guy like James Neal, their all-star, go down, and Alex Tuch, a 21-year-old, comes in, fills in on the second line, moves up to the second line, and I'll tell you what, he's not James Neal, but he's 21 years old. James Neal is 30. Give Alex Tuch 9 years in the NHL, and let's see how good he is. He's a 6'1" kid with just, to me, a tremendous upside, and I like the move. I thought it was another brilliant move by Gerard Gallant, putting the right guy in the right place, and this engine, known as the Vegas Golden Knights, just continues to roll on down the tracks. And the bottom line is also they picked up a great move, another move. George McPhee and his magic calls up Jimmy Rutherford in Pittsburgh, and they get Ryan Reeves, another big 6'1", 225. They needed a bruiser for the playoffs, and be prepared. There's going to be more changes. Listen, we got to go to break. On the other side, we are going to have on with us Ken Morrow, a guy that is truly a legend in the National Hockey League for the fact that what he did, and we'll talk about what he did after this. Kenny Morrow coming up on the other side.
Sutter! Picked out by Glenn Hanlon. Shot! Score! The Islanders have done it! The Islanders! Goal! They have won it in overtime! 3-2! It's over! And the march for the Islanders continues in 84. Never seen hockey like this.
Congratulations. Bob, that's the greatest overtime I've ever seen. The greatest stretch of hockey I've ever seen. Here's the announcement.
Scored by number 6, Ken Morrow. There's the goal scorer, Morrow. There's Billy Smith. Morrow got the goal. Billy Smith had made a big steal seconds before
on Bob Brooks. Well, there's the man who won it, Ken Morrow. There you see the Rangers. There's Barry Beck with his arm in a sling. Carol Vadney, Herb Brook perhaps waiting to congratulate the Islanders. Al Arbor's gone to the room. But he is waiting to see if any of the Islander players come over. Ken Morrow played for Herb Brooks at the Olympics when they won the gold medal. Morrow doesn't know what it's like to lose the gold medal followed by 4 Stanley Cups.
I would have to say, looking back on this series now, I guess, you know, that was only the fitting way to end the series, because, you know, both teams had their strong points, and they played a great series, and for them to be down by a goal and to tie it up and take it into overtime, it just shows the determination and the grit that they had.
That, you, of course, some old school footage there. Pretty cool stuff. Ken Morrow joining us now. And after that game in 1984, it looked like Herb Brooks was waiting for you to come over and acknowledge him, maybe shake his hand. And watching the YouTube video, it looked like after that short celebration on the ice, you left the ice without seeing him. Was that intentional?
Oh, not intentional at all. Hey, that was a blast in the past listening to that. But no, I you know, truly, I didn't realize it until much later when I saw footage that I guess I got caught up in the moment and, you know, headed right off into the locker room and had forgotten to go over and shake Herb's hand.
Well, first of all, you're in New York today. Appreciate you joining the show, my friend. How are you doing out in Missy's hometown?
I'm doing great. It's always good to be out here in New York. I got to be in Vegas and meet up with you last week. And is it true? I hear you guys got some hockey weather out there, a little bit of snow.
Yeah, it's freezing.
It was
actually snowing, a day ago?
Yeah, in parts of town, parts of town, it got pretty darn cold out here. I got to ask you, listening to the footage, and, you know, I went and relived it myself last night. That was the first time I noticed, like I said, I was like, wow. I thought for sure Herbie was waiting on the ice for you in particular, and Krejci went over and said hello to him, shook his hand, but you didn't. So it was kind of funny. But listen, aside from the knee injuries, you know, that I know you fought through, how surreal was that period of your life? I mean, young hockey players dream about one day playing for a Stanley Cup. You go to the Olympics, win a gold medal under the most improbable circumstances, and then before you can even thoroughly enjoy that, you're off to winning your first of four straight Stanley Cups. I mean, it's a dream come true times a zillion, right?
Yeah. How fortunate was I? You know, you start your career off, and, you know, first of all, to go through the Olympic experience was, you know, just a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me. And then to follow that up, you know, my first 5 years in the pros were, we were in the Stanley Cup Finals, winning four in a row, and then being in the fifth final, Edmonton finally knocked us off. But, you know, I had people coming up to me wanting me to pick horse races, and, you know, they felt I was a lucky charm or something. But, you know, an incredible time for me. It was, you know, I sometimes felt like I didn't have time to breathe because I was, you know, it was just one thing after another, and playing till the last game of the season. The seasons were long, and I was always thankful when the summers came around that I was able to catch my breath.
I can imagine. Listen, the gold medal was nearly 38 years ago, and the last Stanley Cup you won was nearly 35 years ago. What do you think is the most amount of time that has gone by in your life since you retired from playing in 1989 that those accomplishments haven't come up in a conversation?
I can tell you that it's almost on a daily basis, you know, especially with the Olympics. You know, when I'm out here in New York, you know, people certainly like to talk about the Stanley Cup, you know, the great rivalry with the Rangers. It's never ending when I'm out in New York area. But with the Olympics, you know, it was, as Al Michaels described it, we were America's team. You know, you have the USA across the front of your jersey, and so, you know, whenever I travel and, you know, I can be anywhere in our country, even overseas when I'm in Europe, people, that's first thing they want to talk about is what happened in 1980 with the Miracle on Ice.
Right. I mean, exactly like we're saying, you won the Stanley Cup and the gold medal in the same year. I mean, not only were you a hero for America, but, you know, New York as well. And now you're recruiting with the Islanders. When you're out there, what are you looking for as far as the players that you're going for? And then, also, since you've been playing, how different has the sport itself become?
Yeah, well, you know, my title is director of pro scouting with the Islanders. I started in 92. I did tried coaching for 3 years after I retired and got into the scouting, and it's been a great way for me to stay involved, maybe one step behind what you'd be doing as a coach, but you know, to stay involved, to be active with the organization, and again, how lucky am I to have stayed with this organization, New York Islanders, for over 30 years. So, you know, I'm out seeing NHL games. I'm seeing minor league games. And I mix in a little bit of college and European scouting, which, you know, breaks it up for me. I'm not just doing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, basically just keeping reports on players. When I started, you know, I was doing it all by hand, writing down reports. And, it's moved into the computer age where, you know, we're putting in reports on players through a computer system, goes into a database, and just keeping tabs on all the players throughout the league. My job is mostly to watch all the other teams, not necessarily our team, but everybody else. And as you mentioned, the game has certainly changed. I think the biggest change came, you know, in the lockout here in 2004 when the league was able to kind of reset itself and open the game up, get away from the trap and the you know, the hooking and holding and clutching and grabbing that was so prevalent, back in the 90s. And it's just a much faster game now. Younger, faster is the way the league has gone.
Right. And now, being an Islander for so many years, how is that for you? I mean, a lot of people don't get to experience that many years in one organization.
It's rare, especially in this business, to have been with the same team. I played my whole career, 10 years, with the Islanders. And then, as I mentioned, over 30 years with them as a player and a scout and 1 year as a coach. So it's, I just consider myself very fortunate. I've seen a lot of ownership groups come and go, a lot of general managers that I've worked for, and just thankful to still be around and to say I've been with this organization that long.
Well, listen, as you mentioned, last week we met you at T-Mobile Arena, and for me it was a thrill. As I mentioned, no blowing smoke up your backside. You were one of the guys that that I definitely I wanted to play hockey. Guys like you, as I mentioned to you when we met, Dennis Potvin, some great players, Brad Park back in the day, defenseman, and that's what I played, and I loved it, and it was because of guys like you. But, when we saw you at T-Mobile Arena, it wasn't an Islanders game. It was a Vegas Golden Knights against the Montreal Canadiens. I never did ask you, why were you in town for that game?
No reason other than to see the teams. Generally see the visiting teams that are coming in. I've seen Vegas a few times this year on the road, and it was a chance for me to come in and see Montreal and Edmonton, teams that I hadn't seen much of this year. Plus the fact that just coming into Vegas, I think the atmosphere is just tremendous. We were there for a few weeks before for our mid-year meetings, and we got to see the Islander game when we were doing that, when we came in and played. The combination of the teams that were there and, just the great atmosphere that's there.
Well, it's cool. I just was making sure you weren't trying to steal any Golden Knight players, that's all. listen, okay.
We wouldn't do that.
Before we let you go, I have to ask you, how much credit do you give to George McPhee, who is a Herb Brooks protege, for the immediate success of the Vegas Golden Knights?
I can tell you that I'm a huge George McPhee fan. I got to play with George for 1 year. I was a senior. He was a freshman coming into Bowling Green. And you could see right away that this guy was something special. And, he ends up winning the Hobey Baker, which is, the hockey equivalent of the Heisman. And, he goes on and plays, in the pros. I played against him a few years. And there wasn't a more intense competitor than George. Tough as nails. And then he's a smart guy on top of all that. So, it doesn't surprise me that they're having at such an early stage here, and the head coach that they have is a very similar guy, same qualities as George. So you guys are very lucky to have those guys there.
Love the Turk, and he is Ken Morrow, Miracle on Ice, a huge part of that. Not as big of a part of the movie as he should have been, but that's because he's too nice of a guy and let that happen to him. And, of course, four straight Stanley Cups with the New York Islanders, almost five straight. You heard the one Rangers game. That was in round one. You guys went all the way to the finals, and then Edmonton paid you back for the year before when you took them out in the Stanley Cup finals 4-1, and they swept the Islanders, and that was kind of the end of the big run. But really cool. Kenny, listen, man, really appreciate you joining the show today. We are way behind in our schedule, but loved having you. We will definitely do this again, my friend. You take care, and thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Again, Kenny Morrow. Listen, we're going to come back on the other side. We'll try to play the Kurt Busch. You will hear him, who is getting ready to come to Vegas next week. He'll be here with his brother Kyle and, of course, Jeff Motley on the other side as well.
Welcome back, and talking with Kurt Busch, the 2017 Daytona 500 winner, and damn close again in 2018. Kurt, a couple days removed now, you've had a little bit of time to reflect on it. How you feeling, my friend?
I'm doing all right, man. Still a little disappointed we didn't get the victory and came so close to winning the Daytona 500 back-to-back. I felt like the team did a great job. Our pit stop sequence was smooth. We did everything we needed to do to be back in that same position. And, a couple laps to go, we're leading. And I chose to move up to the outside lane, and that put us right in front of Ryan Blaney. And he was on the aggressive side as far as, you know, the draft was going, and it just took our chances away at winning the race. So maybe should have stayed on the inside, but, man, I'm starting to armchair quarterback this thing now.
Well, I can imagine. Always after the fact, in retrospect, it's easy to see what maybe you could have done differently. I thought you ran a great race. And how about Austin Dillon, you know, taking away a little bit of the thunder? I mean, last year, Kurt Busch makes history. The first driver ever to only lead one lap and win the Daytona 500. And 1 year later, it's done again, man. I mean, couldn't they have given you a few years to hang on to that?
Yeah, that's how our races, especially at Daytona and Talladega, have started to form. You don't have to be up front leading laps. You just have to have the least amount of damage and be in the right spot on the last lap. And that's why I was thinking, you know, I tried to take the lead back with two laps to go. Maybe I just needed to wait until that last lap and lead just that one.
Well, tell me this, Kurt. Some of the other drivers coming up, guys like Austin Dillon, and I'll tell you what, Bubba Wallace Jr., man, what a race this kid ran. I didn't need to see all the tears at the end of the race, but that's my opinion. But what a race this kid ran. What kind of driver? These young drivers, man, are really, really coming up super aggressive, right?
Yeah, they're all doing a good job. You know, there's the dues that they've had to pay in the other, you know, cars that they raced, whether it was Truck Series or the Xfinity Series or, you know, the late models around the country, and now they're, boom, they're in the Cup, and they're being promoted heavily because the sport needs to do that for them, because there's just not that genuine icon in our sport like Dale Jr. was for the last two decades, or Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart. You know, those guys are done racing now, and so still got a big group of veterans out there with Jimmy Johnson, Harvick, myself, Hamlin, Keselowski's a champion. My little brother, I think, you know, Kyle's probably the youngest with the most stats. I think right now he's probably the people that don't know much about NASCAR definitely need to be looking at him.
Oh, he's a great driver. Had a chance to talk to Kyle a couple times, and a good guy, and like you said, hell of a driver, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from him in the future. You talked about Tony Stewart, and of course, again, finally the silly season rumors and everything, we can put all that crap behind us. You are definitely on the Stewart Haas Racing team again. You've been there since 2014. You've got some great teammates on this team, and of course, Clint Bowyer, Kevin Harvick, and Erica Almirola, I believe you pronounce it. I know he had a good run as well. Pretty solid team you got there again this year.
Yeah, good group of drivers, and so our second year was Ford at Stewart Haas Racing, so we don't have that learning curve to go through, and, you know, the drivers are as hungry as ever, the team is stable, there's great sponsors all throughout, and to have Monster Energy back me again, this is our sixth year together, so much fun to be part of the Monster Energy fraternity with all the other riders and athletes. And my job is to go out there and get trophies in NASCAR.
Well, hopefully, well, Monster Energy, a very cool look on the hood of the car. Kurt, coming up now, here we're coming back. You've got this weekend. I know the circuit's in Atlanta this weekend, but then you guys, or I should say the circuit, you guys head to Vegas again for race weekend here. Three races this year. You've got the Stratosphere 200 on Friday, and I'm just talking about all the events that will be going on here on 2 weeks from now. You got the Boyd Gaming 300 on that Saturday, and then, of course, culminating with the Pennzoil 400, the big race on Sunday. How important is these races? I know Kyle a couple of years ago got the Saturday race, but how important is, like, would a win be in Las Vegas for your career?
Man, I've just had the worst luck, it seems like, or I've been overdriving it, or just mechanical things. I don't know. Vegas has been tough on me over the years, and my little brother's won there, and I felt it. I felt like that unique hometown feel of winning in front of all the fans that supported us from the beginning. What was a unique, special feeling. I want to do that for our Vegas fans and the community. So I'm definitely pushing hard this year. I want to try to win at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Well, we're hoping you have some good success out here. Kurt, 39 this year. How much did that Daytona 500 last year rejuvenate you, respark? I mean, you've got, you know, 29 wins on the Premier Series Championship Tour, you know, circuit, but how much, winning the big one, winning the Kahuna, the crown jewel, how much did that rejuvenate you and say, you know what, I'm going to keep going for a few more years, man?
I mean, it's huge. The win at Daytona, I mean, it's the most powerful, prestigious, and just flat out the coolest race in stock car history. And to have that trophy, it's very special. And have it go along with the Monster Energy Cup that I have. And I don't know. I mean, there's so many cool wins still out there, so much more to do. And I'm with a new group of guys on the 41 car this year. And it's fun working with different guys and some younger guys that I'm mentoring and helping out. And so there's just so many different hats to wear and so much fun to be had in the circuit. But you never know when there's going to be that last race or that last year. And there's other different racing and TV and stuff out there as well. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I heard we're going to be seeing you. It looks like when it's all said and done, you're looking at going into television announcing and doing some NASCAR broadcasting.
Yeah, it just depends whether it's NASCAR. I was at Supercross and X Games a couple weeks back. I'm looking at different racing around the world for whether I'm participating or spreading the love to keep motorsports alive and have everybody excited to watch, the racing side of things, sports cars, dirt tracks, you name it. I want to be out there pushing that and helping everybody learn more about motorsport.
Well, they can learn a lot from you. And last couple questions on the track itself at LVMS, at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. What are your favorite things about that track? What are your least favorite things about that track? And what do you think is the most exciting thing that spectators can expect to see during these races?
Man, there's so much fun to be had from all areas at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. The Neon Garage is a state-of-the-art facility for the crew guys, for the fans to enjoy. There's food, concessions, different viewing platforms. The media center there is incredible, and the reach that it has. There's not a bad seat in the house at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and whether it's a camper in the infield section or out in the outskirts, people are always having fun at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I guess the toughest part would be just traffic, getting in and out, but I'm a guy that goes early and stays late, so I don't have to deal with the traffic. And, after the race, there's so much to do in Vegas. All the nightlife, the hotels, casinos, restaurants, the entertainment. There's not a bad place to go in Vegas to visit.
Pretty cool. Kurt, finally, last thing, you get to come home, family, friends, and stuff are here. Obviously, Daytona 500, the crown jewel, you look forward to that, but is this one of the races you look most forward to, and hopefully get rid of that bad luck, like we said, eventually get a win here, but is this one of the venues that you look most forward to?
It is, definitely, with family, friends, the community, everybody in Vegas. It's great to see my old friend Craig Q from Star Nursery and the different nursery locations that he's built. The restaurants with some old school places that I still go to, and just coming back home. Everything is comfortable, and I know how to get my way around and kind of know what to do with I-15 and US 95.
And, once you've been here a while, I've been here since 04, it's not hard to navigate the area. I tell everyone, look, the way you navigate is find the Luxor light in the stratosphere. They'll guide you all the time. You can see them from just about anywhere. Kurt, as I let you go, my friend, you're feeling well. You're getting excited for this race. And since the show's called Out of Line, I got to have you make a prediction on the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, the Pennzoil 400. Who's winning it this year?
Man, if it can't be me or my little brother, I'll tell you, that Trex guy and that Furniture Row team are strong, so I'd watch out for that 78 car out there.
We appreciate you, my friend. Listen, have a safe weekend this week, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a little over a week here in Las Vegas.
Appreciate it again. Thanks for having me on, and we'll see everybody out the track.
Okay, that was... of course, Kurt Busch, man, talked to him the other day. It's time for Nightcap, Vegas Golden Knights. Oh, okay, you're right. I'm sorry. We already played. This cold's kicking my butt. We got Jeff Motley is coming on right now, and he is the vice president of public relations at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Jeff is the one who issues media credentials. He takes care of everything on race weekend and all year at the LVMS. Jeff, I'm sure you saw the Daytona 500, another great race that came down to the wire. When all is said and done, you have another guy in Austin Dillon who wins the crown jewel for the first time, and he does it by only leading the last lap. How good are both of those things for the sport that already has a huge cult-like following?
Well, first off, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it. I think it's good for the sport in that you had a young driver win the race, somebody who's an up-and-coming guy. I know Austin's been around in the Cup Series now for 4 or 5 years, but he's still a pretty young guy, and I think that's kind of injecting some life into the sport to have some new guys come along. You know, I think it's important. And we've got so many good young drivers, the William Byrons and Chase Elliotts, Ryan Blaney and Bubba Wallace and Alex Bowman and all these guys. And I think just seeing some of these new guys come along and seeing one able to win it, I think that probably gets people excited. And you saw the number three car win it. And there's still so many of the Earnhardt fans, the Dale Earnhardt Sr. fans out there who equate that three with Dale Sr. And it was the first time that the three had been to victory lane at Daytona in 20 years since Earnhardt won it in 98. So I think all those things coming together certainly create a lot of excitement.
Yeah, and it was cool seeing Dylan do exactly, almost emulate what Dale Sr. did after he won the Daytona 500 by doing the massive spinouts in the infield, but almost emulate it. Listen, you've added a third race on Friday to the schedule this year, the Stratosphere 200 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, a racing series that has always taken place in the fall here. It was only, I think, September 30th when Ben Rhodes won the Las Vegas 350. Is this race going to be a permanent fixture on NASCAR weekend, and is it going to replace the race in the fall?
No. Well, yes and no. Yes, it is going to be a fixture on the race weekend in the spring, but no, it's not going to replace the one in the fall because we're also going to run the trucks in the fall. So for the first time in the history of Las Vegas Motor Speedway, we are going to run a triple header next weekend with the trucks on Friday, the Xfinity on Saturday, and the Cup Series on Sunday. But we will do another triple header in September with trucks, Xfinity, and Cup, and we will become the first track in the history of NASCAR to host two triple header weekends in one season.
That's really cool, and if you haven't been down there, you got to experience it. Okay, tell us about what is still available for purchase and what you would recommend for someone that wants the full NASCAR experience but hasn't purchased tickets yet.
Well, the best deal you can get is actually to get an annual ticket for both weekends. If you do that, you get a 40% savings on the second weekend, and you can really come out and enjoy everything. Friday is going to be an historic day for the Speedway because it's going to be the first time ever in Las Vegas Motor Speedway history that we have had Cup cars, Xfinity cars, and trucks on the track in the same day. So we will have practice and qualifying for the Pennzoil 400 for the Cup Series. We will have practice for the Boyd Gaming 300 Xfinity Series. We will have qualifying and the race for the Stratosphere 200 for the Truck Series. So Friday is a very unique day that can see all three series competing. But the idea is to come out for the entire weekend and get a little bit of everything. All kinds of different types of racing, different drivers. You know, Sunday, obviously, the big day with all the entertainment going on and, you know, the VIPs and going into the Neon Garage and seeing the drivers meeting. You know, there's just always something going on.
Right, and Jeff, when Brian asked Kurt Busch who he thought was going to win, he said if it's not going to be him or Kyle, he was going to go with Martin Truex Jr. to go back-to-back at the LVMS. Who do you think you like to win the Pennzoil 400 next Sunday?
Wow, you know, for me, it's really hard to pick against Brad Keselowski. You know, Brad's won two of the last four. And I know Truex won last year, but I think we all forget that Keselowski pretty much had the race won with a lap and a half to go and had a mechanical problem, which allowed Truex to pass it. So Keselowski has been so good on this racetrack. He was also out here to test about a month ago. So if I had to pick somebody, I would say Keselowski would be my favorite as far as who I think has a great chance to win. I would certainly love to see Kurt or Kyle, either one, land in victory lane. In some ways, I think for Kyle, the truck race may be more important to him on Friday night. No driver has ever won a truck race, an Xfinity race, and a Cup race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Kyle has won in the Cup Series. He's won in the Xfinity Series, but he's never won in the trucks. So he could make history if he was able to do that.
Trifecta for Kyle Busch would be awesome. I'd like to see Kurt win. I just think he's such a great guy. I love talking to him on the show. He is Jeff Motley, Vice President of Public Relations for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Jeff, as we do every year, appreciate you joining the show. And right now, give us a call at 702-876-1340. We're going to give you a pair of tickets to Saturday's race, the Boyd Gaming 300. Jeff, thanks, brother. We'll see you out there next weekend.
Absolutely. Take care. Thanks for having me.
All right, that again, Jeff Motley, Vice President. Hey, we're just about out of time, so I don't know if we're going to be able to do much more than this. I'm just going to tell you this. UNLV is playing at New Mexico. It's a rare Sunday morning game. It starts in a couple of hours from right now, and I think this is a crucial game for UNLV. Just we need to see them put it back together.
Yep.
The last couple games at San Diego State, the game against Fresno, we all were there on Wednesday night. It was brutal. And this team has got to play better down in the pit in New Mexico. We'll see that in a couple hours. Listen, we're out of time. I want to thank everyone for joining the show today. Loved having Kenny Morrow on. Got to thank Kurt Busch for giving me all that time. William Carlson. Of course, Jose Volonte is here taking care of us. And definitely check his Facebook page out. He does some great stuff as well. Of course, the beautiful podcast and lovely co-host, Missy Lynn, and the guy behind the big board making it all happen, Chris Magnum Chapman. Check him out all the time on Vegas Knights game day broadcast, as well as our producer right here on Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman. We are here every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 a.m., the radio home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you next week. We're out.